Seychelles, I'm sweaty DV. Well, I'm for seven in the Seychelles and the Lady Biscuit. I'm going to tell you the same, the Lazo Lazo Lapera, Success of the Tom Zena, Tasmai, Sweet of Enema. Sweet Lady Tanya, one of these terms, the Pitam de Rutale, Siam, with the Penomen, the Baptist of the Net. Manza kapıcı besçe, kipsin de bayi besa, pati tanım bamanı be o besin de yuvana mağını bağlı. I'd like to try my best to quickly go through the prayers of the demigods to see the mood of a demigod in relationship to Krishna and what they see when they see him. Yesterday, we heard their first prayer, which used what word again and again?
Satya.
Satya. There are so many relationships to Krishna, to the Satya, to the truth. And ultimately, the demigods asked for protection. Now, they continue, and the verses, the prayers go from, and always the meanings of the prayers are so, when they use different names of Krishna, they're so pointed for specific purposes, not whimsical, so you never deviate from your vow, which of course is you've come. Whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone, and you're going to remove the burden of the earth. You're present in all phases of time. You're the supreme truth. Because you're the supreme truth, unless one is some completely truthful, one cannot approach you. You're the active principle. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita also. Everything that is the essence of everything, practically speaking, the ability in man, the taste in water, is you who's giving essential life to all in existence. You are the ingredients of creation. You're the inner force, the super soul. You're equal to everyone. Your instructions apply for everyone, for all time, which is a very powerful statement. For all time, Krishna's instructions apply to everyone. There is no escape. You're the beginning of all truths, of all truth, because all other truths rest upon you, and therefore offering you our obeisances, we surrender unto you, kindly give us protection. So the next two verses, and of course Prabhupada is interesting purports here, and some of them are quite long, but we're going to just quickly move through and maybe touch a few of them, because there's some verses that are, because the demigods speak very much from a jnana point of view, because their vision is very, very big, and then they use that to approach the devotional point of view. So then they explain, I won't read the whole verse, very long verse, they say that the body, and what they mean by that, there is called samasti and vyasti. That means the macrocosm, the microcosm. So the whole universe is one kind of a body, and our individual bodies are another kind of a body. So they speak of both at the same time, which is, of course, very interesting. When you speak on two completely different levels at the same time, and all the words that they speak will apply to both different levels. So they talk about the total body and the individual body, or the body, either one, may be called the original tree. And then they describe the different fruits of that tree, the fruits of the material world, the fruits of our body, happiness, distress, and the cause of the tree, the roots, three roots, the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, and there are tastes of the tree that come from the tree. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, liberation. Which taste do you like? Which is your favorite? No one wants to answer. Okay. So we have the different tastes that come from the tree of the body that the material world gives us. And these tastes are experienced through the knowledge acquiring senses in six circumstances. So this is a description of the tree. The six circumstances of life are lamentation. So this is how we experience life. Illusion, old age, death, hunger, and thirst. And then there's seven layers of bark, which on the tree, and eight branches, and has nine hollows and 10 leaves. And on the tree are two birds. And one bird, of course, is the individual soul, and the other is the super soul. The demigods are speaking. This is how they view material existence as a great tree. And of course, from the Bhagavad Gita, we know that it's growing with its roots upwards and its branches down, a reflection of the tree in the spiritual world. So then they say that the cause, efficient cause, means the ultimate cause of this material world, or the tree, with its all of its different varieties, is you. So that's how they're seeing. They're praying to the Garbha, the Krishna within the womb, is that you are the cause of all of this. Even though it appears that you're covered by the womb, you're the cause of this tree of material existence. And not only are you the cause, they say, you're the maintainer. So this type of vision, and of course, you're not only the maintainer, but after you cause the annihilation, and after the existence is annihilated, everything enters within you. But those who are covered by Maya, they cannot see that behind this manifestation is you. They cannot see. But their vision, those who are covered by Maya, their vision is not the same as the vision of the learned devotees. Pashanti nana navapaschito ye. Then, O Lord, so they're describing first, after the first verse that we read yesterday, that you're the absolute truth. There's the tree of material existence, there's the source of the tree of material existence, and now you are always full of knowledge. They're moving towards describing him more. You're always full of knowledge, and to bring all good fortune to living entities, you appear in different incarnations, all of them transcendental to the material creation that we see. When you appear in these incarnations, you're pleasing to the pious and religious devotees, but for the non-devotees, you are the annihilator. So this is the vision again of the demigods. Now here's the more devotional, some devotional verses come. O lotus-eyed Lord, Tvayi ambu jaksha akila sattvam damni sama dina vishita chaita saika tvapara potena mahat kritena govanti govatsa padam bhavambudhi. What does govatsa mean? Padam, govatsa padam. Yeah, so hoof print of a calf, govanti, govatsa padam bhavam dir. O lotus-eyed one, ambudaksha, by concentrating one's meditation on your lotus feet, which also means the service of your lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all existence, because from Krishna's lotus feet, the lowest part of the transcendence on one level, and then all material existence comes from that. It's the reservoir of all material existence. And by accepting those lotus feet as the boat by which to cross, so the incarnations all come, And by meditating, and they've come to do good for everyone, but by meditating on your lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all existence is sheltered by your lotus feet. And by accepting those lotus feet as the boat by which to cross of the ocean of nescience, one follows in the footsteps of Mahajans, the great saints, sages, and devotees. By this simple process, one can cross the ocean of nescience as easily as one steps over the hoofprint of a calf. So this verse is also a verse very similar, spoken in the chapter of Brahma's prayers, Samasvitami Parapalava Prabham. Okay, so by this simple process, which simple process? Yeah, and accepting specifically by meditating upon him, but by accepting those lotus feet as the boat by which to cross the ocean of nescience. When one does that, one follows the footsteps of the Mahajans, because this is the process by which the Mahajanas have used to cross the ocean of material existence. So that means basically by surrendering to Krishna, I am yours, Krishna. And by this simple process, one can cross the ocean of nescience as easily as one steps over the hoofprint of a calf. In other words, the ocean of nescience, the oceans of material existence, is so vast, it's not possible for someone to cross over it, practically speaking. But by accepting this method, which is the method of the Mahajans, by full surrender to Krishna, then the size of that, of the entirety of the ocean, shrinks to the size of the water that fills a calf's hoofprint, and one can easily step over it. So this is what the demigods are saying. Another verse. O Lord, very, very much compliments this verse. O Lord, who resembles the shining sun. In what sense does Krishna resemble the shining sun? And remember, he's covered. He's in the womb right now. In what sense does he represent the shining sun?
Casting light within the darkness of the material.
Yeah. And light always means knowledge. Knowledge of... Because in the darkness, you can't see what is what. You can't see accurately. By the torchlight of knowledge, things are illumined, and you can see things in their proper perspective. So, and Maya is compared to darkness, Maya Haya Andhakar. So Maya gives us an illusory sense of existence. And in that illusory sense, we imagine ourselves as central to existence. And it's so amazing, because although we're central to existence, when we die, somehow or another, it goes on without us. Somehow or another, it goes on without us. Doesn't even notice practically existence. It just rolls, keeps on rolling through. So, O Lord, who resembles the shining sun, you're always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee. And therefore, you are known as a desire tree. So first, the living entity in material existence was called a tree, but because this tree of this world is a reflection of the tree in the spiritual world, and Krishna is also here called a tree, but a desire tree. What kind of a desire tree? Means that whatever the devotee desires, he fulfills that desire. So actually, this is what we see manifest throughout the rest of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, that Krishna is fulfilling the desires of his devotees. So he's fulfilling the desires of his devotees in Dwaraka, he's fulfilling the desires of his devotees in Mathura, and he's fulfilling the desires of his devotees in Braja. And because the devotees have different moods in their loving service to him, there's those three dhams, which are especially specially exist to fulfill the different qualities of their desires. You are known as a desire tree, and when acharyas completely take shelter, again taking shelter of your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, so again a similar point is made, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. So, Prabhupada explains in his purport that the duty of the guru is to find the means according to the time, circumstances, and the candidate by which one can be induced to render devotional service, which Krishna accepts from a candidate who wants to be successful in going home back to Godhead. The acharya's duty is therefore to find the means by which the devotees may render service according to reference from Shastra. The acharya's duty, Rupa Goswami, for example, in order to help subsequent devotees, published such devotional books as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Thus it is the duty of the acharya to publish books that will help future candidates take up the method of service and become eligible to return home back to Godhead. So they leave behind the boat by which they use the boat of the Lord's lotus feet to cross the fierce ocean of material existence. But usually when you take a boat to the other side, the boat's on the other side. It's no longer on the side that you boarded from. But they leave behind the boat as well. So that and Krishna accepts the methodology of what they leave behind so that all those following them can cross. Now, someone may say, well, aside from the devotees, there are others who are not devotees, and they attain different, they have their own ways, they have different processes, not whimsically, but they have different processes for attaining salvation, which means crossing beyond the fierce ocean of material existence. What happens to them? So this is all parenthetical. In answer to this question, Lord Brahma and the other demigods say, so here's the next verse. O lotus-eyed Lord, and this is another famous verse, Ye Nye Aravindaksha, again, O lotus-eyed one, Vimuktimaninas, Trayasta Bhavad, Avishuddha Buddhaya, Aruha Kitsena, Parampadam Dita, Patantido, Andrit Yusman Angraya. So, in answer to the question, how about others in the different paths, other than fully taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. It's a very strong statement, actually, that the lotus feet of Krishna are the boat that can help us cross. And if we try other methodologies, we will not be successful. Another important verse. They say, O Madhava, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is the guarantee, so to speak, of the glory of the devotional path of taking shelter of the Lord. O Lord, Goddess of Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, if devotees completely in love with you sometimes fall down from the path of devotion, they don't fall like non-devotees, for you still protect them. Thus they fearlessly traverse the heads of their opponents and continue to progress in devotional service. So because he is the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, if one takes shelter, then one also becomes blessed by good fortune. The devotees, Tavaka Pache Prashanti Margat. They fall from the path. But Bada Surida, because of their fully attached to your lotus feet, they're protected from all dangers. So more glory of the path. Then, O Lord, during the time of maintenance, it moves on now, their prayers, you manifest several incarnations. So this is the view of the demigods as they see this, and they see all that they have said, because they've seen many incarnations come. You manifest several incarnations, all with transcendental bodies beyond the material modes of nature. When you appear in this way, you bestow all good fortune upon the living entities. So here's what the incarnations do. By teaching them to perform Vedic activities such as ritualistic ceremonies, mystic yoga, austerities, penances, and ultimately samadhi, ecstatic absorption and thought of you. Thus you are worshipped by the Vedic principles. So this is the purpose of all the Vedic principles and the Lord's incarnations in teaching people to either step by step or quickly become fully absorbed in samadhi and thoughts of Krishna. And it's ironic in one sense that the method of bhakti, which is complete absorption in thoughts of Krishna, which is the ultimate of the other paths, it's that samadhi is most expertly performed by the residents of Vrindavan. Of course, the queens of Dwarka and everyone in Dwarka, they're always and only thinking of Krishna. But the topmost level of this, the supreme practitioners of yoga, are the simple village folks of Braja, who know nothing other than Krishna. From the moment they wake up till the moment they go to sleep, and in between, while they're sleeping, there's only Krishna. Their consciousness is absorbed in Krishna. And this absorption in Krishna is the actual process of bhakti. And there are two parts to this process. Two methodologies. One is Vaidhi Bhakti, where the thinking of Krishna and the activities are impelled by Shastra. And the other is Ragmarg, where the thinking of Krishna is impelled by the natural attraction to Krishna. And this absorption in Krishna, thinking about Krishna, is so powerful that in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, an example of this is Sisupal given, who's so completely absorbed in Krishna, even in enmity. So if Krishna, or the other example, but especially this one is given to describe the potency of being somehow or another fully absorbed in Krishna, that Sisupal was so fully absorbed in Krishna that he ended his material existence. So this shocked Yudhisthira. Even Krishna killed him, and he was so demonic. But because his consciousness was full of Krishna, also Kamsa was so full of Krishna, his consciousness, all day long, all night long, he didn't think of anything but Krishna. And it was so powerful that even though the thoughts were so antagonistic to Krishna, it freed them from the material world. And Putana, another powerful example, a little bit different, but especially Kamsa and Sisupal. So if thoughts of Krishna in enmity free one from the material world, just imagine what thoughts of Krishna, what that brings one to if one is full of attraction and affection and love for Krishna. And why is it so powerful? To think of Krishna's name, to think of Krishna's form, to think of Krishna's qualities, and ultimately to think of Krishna's pastimes. Because, the next verse, O Lord, cause of all causes, If your transcendental body were not beyond the modes of material nature, one could not understand the difference between matter and transcendence. Only by your presence can one understand the transcendental nature of your lordship, who are the controller of material nature. Your transcendental nature is very difficult to understand unless one is influenced by the presence of your transcendental form. So they're seeing that Krishna has appeared and Devaki has become as effulgent as a thousand suns. And seeing that Krishna's presence is so different, it's of a different quality than material existence. The demigods say that this makes it easy to understand the difference between you and material existence. When one stands in front of powerful deities, it's a different realm. When one becomes absorbed in the Bhagavatam, it's different. If one becomes absorbed in Krishna Katha and the association of devotees, it's a different realm. And the easiest form of Krishna to become absorbed in is his holy name. And this is specifically Mahaprabhu brought this so much to the attention of the people in Kali Yuga. Although the holy names were always existing as methodology, the Mahamantra, but Mahaprabhu brought it to everyone's attention, held up the banner very high, that chant the holy names of Krishna, Kalo Nasteva 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 Gatya Niyata. And we love the deities, say, but then the doors of the temple close and we can't see the deities. And then the temple itself closes at night. But still you have the holy names. You can take, so the holy names are so merciful. So that the quality of existence of Krishna in these different forms really shows us the difference between matter and spirit. They continue, O Lord, your transcendental name and form are not ascertained by those who merely speculate, the jnanis, on the path of imagination. Your name, form, and attributes can be ascertained only through devotional service. So by touching, so the potency of Krishna's names, etc., and the form are revealed really to the devotees, fully to the devotees. They see abhinatvam namanamano. So it's by devotional service can one fully experience Krishna through his holy names. And even, here's a real nice one, and even when engaged in various activities, devotees whose minds are completely absorbed at your lotus feet and who constantly hear, chant, and contemplate and cause others to remember your transcendental names and forms, they're always on the transcendental platform, and thus they can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in the last verse it said that you can be understood, by, really understood by those in devotional service. And what does that mean? And Prabhupada begins his purport by saying how bhakti yoga can be practiced, how devotional service is practiced, is explained in this verse. Whose minds are completely absorbed at your lotus feet, who constantly hear, chant, and contemplate, and cause others to remember your transcendental names and forms. Even while they're engaged in various activities, are always on the transcendental platform, and thus they can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, why is this so important for us to understand? And this is the second chapter of the 10th canto, because we're going to see people in Braja, in Dvaraka, but especially in Braja, people, persons completely engaged in other activities, but their minds are completely absorbed in Krishna's lotus feet. They're always, constantly hearing, chanting, contemplating, and causing others to remember his transcendental names and forms. So it is important that we understand that these persons, despite their being superficially engaged in other activities, they're always on the transcendental platform, and they're actually understanding the Supreme Lord is revealing himself to them in his sweetest feature. And then there's more about their situation. Oh Lord, we are fortunate because the heavy burden of the demons upon the earth is immediately removed by your appearance. Indeed, we are certainly fortunate, for we shall be able to see upon this earth and in the heavenly planets the marks of the lotus, conch shell, club, and disc that adorn your lotus feet. What do they mean by that? Yeah, but where did, but how heaven? Where would they see Krishna in heaven? But here, now they're talking about this incarnation. Krishna goes to the heavenly planets with the earrings of Aditi. Let's see what Prabhupada says in his purport. Nice purport here. The soles of the Lord's feet are marked with shankh, chakra, gada, padma, kansha, disc, club, and lotus, and also by a flag and a thunderbolt. When Krishna walks on this earth or in the heavenly planets, these marks are visible wherever he goes. Vrindavan Dham is a transcendental place because of Krishna's walking on this land frequently. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were fortunate to see these marks here and there. When Akura went to Vrindavan to take Krishna and Balaram away to the festival arranged by Kamsa, upon seeing the marks of the Lord's lotus feet on the ground in Vrindavan, he fell down and he began to groan. These marks are visible to devotees who receive the causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demigods were jubilant, not only because the appearance of the Supreme Lord would do away with the burdensome demons, but also because they would be able to see upon the ground the transcendental marks from the soles of the Lord's lotus feet. The gopis always thought of the Lord's lotus feet when he was walking in the pasturing ground, and as described in the previous verse, simply by thinking of the Lord's lotus feet, the gopis were fully absorbed in transcendence. Like the gopis, one who is always absorbed in thought of the Lord is beyond the material platform and will not remain in this material world. It is our duty, therefore, always to hear, chant, and think about the Lord's lotus feet, as actually done by Vaishnavas who have decided to live in Vrindavan always and think of the Lord's lotus feet 24 hours a day. What do you think of that? That's a direction, isn't it? Next verse. So that verse again was, we're fortunate because you're just by your appearance. It's like when the sun is going to rise, it means the dispelling of darkness even before it's up. So even though Krishna, the son of Krishna, has not risen in one sense, they know that his coming means the end of the demons, and that's why they had prayed for him to come. O Lord, Supreme Lord, you are not an ordinary living entity appearing in this material world as a result of fruitive activities. Therefore, your appearance or birth in this world has no other cause than your pleasure potency. Similarly, the living entities who are part of you have no cause for miseries like birth, death, and old age, except when these living entities are conducted by your external energy. So it's artificial. All the suffering in this world is artificial. And therefore Prabhupada says in the purport, since Krishna is not subject to birth, death, old age, or disease, and since we are parts and parcels of Krishna, we are also not subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. But we have become subject to these illusory problems because of our forgetfulness of Krishna and forgetfulness of our positions as eternal servants. Therefore, if we practice devotional service by always thinking of the Lord, always glorifying Him and always chanting about Him, as described in text 37, Srinvan Grinan Sam Smayams Chavchintayan. If we do this by chanting about Him and glorifying Him and thinking about Him, we will be reinstated in our original constitutional position and thus be saved. The demigods therefore encourage Devaki not to fear Kamsa, but to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who was already within her womb. And then moving towards the end, just two more verses. O Supreme Controller, your Lordship previously accepted incarnations as a fish. What's the name of the fish? A horse?
I agree.
A tortoise?
Corn.
Nisringadev? A boar? A swan? Lord Ramachandra, Rajiram, Pasaram, and amongst the demigods, Vamanadeva, to protect the entire world by your mercy. Now please protect us again by your mercy, by diminishing the disturbances in this world. O Krishna, best of the Yadus, we respectfully offer our obeisances unto you. You always come to... Again and again you've come to remove the burden of the earth, and now you please do this. O Mother Devaki, by your good fortune and ours, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, with all His plenary portions, such as Baladev, is now within your womb. Therefore you need not fear Kamsa, who has decided to be killed by the Lord. Your eternal son, Krishna, will be the protector of the entire Yadu dynasty. After offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the Transcendence, all the demigods with Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva before them, return to their homes in the heavenly planets. Well, we read all the prayers of the demigods. Who thought we could have done that? So what were they saying? What was the essence of what they were saying? To Devaki they were saying one thing. To the Lord they were saying something. And to us they were saying something. What do you understand they were saying? What struck you amidst their prayers? What things?
Don't fear. Take shelter of the Lord.
Very good. What else?
Aren't you taking the process of hearing something like that? To remember, meditate on, stand in the shelter of the Lord's feet. He's come to give that opportunity.
Yeah. That was sort of... They really wanted to tell us, wasn't it? That this is the boat. Full absorption. And we're going to see that it is done by so many of the personalities in that we're going to hear about in the 10th canto. They're fully absorbed in saying the names, glorifying, thinking about his feet, thinking about his activities. It's their shelter.
Is there just one with the material ocean, which is very vast? Can we reduce the size of the conscious footprint if one takes shelter in the process of meditating on those lotus feet and sitting in the following the process given by the Mahatma? And if somebody thinks that they can do it in another way and their intelligence is not very good.
They think they're liberated in advance, but it's vimukti maninas. Just in their mind, that's where it's all happening. It's not happening in the realm of reality. And this is the demigod speaking. And Krishna accepts the path of the acharyas, what they've left behind. He accepts that methodology.
We hear, I mean, not now at our level, but in general, when one hears the advanced level, there's the demigods, like what you were saying, that this is the way the demigods see. If one aspires to see Krishna in the way that the residents of Vrindavan see him, and the way they see him is different than the way the demigods see him, how does one understand that?
What?
How, if one aspires to see Krishna the way the residents of Vrindavan see him, and then there's the way the demigods see him, and the demigods have a different view than.
But the instructions that the demigods give are the instructions that will help us achieve the vision that the residents of Vrindavan have. Mm-hmm. We progressively see.
They want to lead us to be very Aishwarya bound.
Like I guess because I was reading it, it was sort of maybe more obvious. No, but if we heard what they actually said,
mm-hmm. They're instructing something in a process which we see the reasons and involvement of the perfection of that process.
Yeah, this is very, very good teaching because it's applicable on many levels, and the highest level of just what they said was the level of absorption practiced by the residents of Vrindavan. So they're the highest point, but if you keep the highest point is high, but you don't know how to get there, then it's very, very frustrating. So they talked about the methodology of getting there. And it was interesting that they were feeling themselves fortunate for two reasons. One was that Krishna had come as was going to solve their immediate problem of the overburden of the earth. But it wasn't only that where they thought they were fortunate, because they also thought they were fortunate because they were going to see Krishna's footprints upon the ground. So Krishna's footprints on the ground, even though it says it in the heavenly planets too, but mostly it's in Vrindavan, because in Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't wear shoes. No chappals. So, yeah, this is what's described in relationship to Dhruva Maharaj. So they were, and in fact, as the Goswamis describe, when Krishna would be coming back from the forest every day, the demigods would come down and see him and offer prayers. And the coward boys would imitate them and make jokes and say, let's go. It's taking too long. So, but yet, what I wanted to say was They were seeing themselves fortunate for those two reasons. And you contrast that consciousness even to the of the residents of Vrindavan, is they only had one reason. They wanted to always meditate on Krishna. They didn't think about their own protection, even in a way of duty. They just wanted to be fully absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna. That was the essential message. But this is to prepare, from the presentation point of view, it's to prepare our consciousness for what we're going to see in the 10th canto. Well, that's one thing. That's one level, so we'll be able to properly understand Braja and Dwarka and Krishna's dealings with Banasura and everyone, and that he's above everything. And if we focus our consciousness on him, we also become above everything. And those who are focusing, though it's not spoken about directly, but Prabhupada did mention in the purport, that just see the residents of Vrindavan. That was the examples that he gave. So those persons are extraordinary. They're not of this world. And it's also, that's one of the excellences of bhakti, is that the means and the end are the same. So the perfect performers of bhakti, they're always absorbed in what did Krishna do today and everything, and the methodology of achieving the perfection is exactly the same, of chanting and hearing, etc. So therefore Prabhupada's wonderful purport explained that about that this should be the aspiration of those who want to go to that realm. To be absorbed in that way. It's a very high teaching, actually. What else struck? Even if someone who's taken shelter of the Lord's feet falls from the path, he gets help by the mercy of those of the Lord. That was also one verse on that. So it's quite a path. You want to say something? Huh? No. Hard day soaring. Did you get the box finished?
Not quite.
There was one part that I remembered that, again, it was mentioned already, but although engaged in various activities, it's extraordinary if one can keep one's consciousness absorbed in Krishna while those activities, and that's also true in seemingly ordinary activities, and also true in devotional activities, remembering who we're doing it to please. Mam anusmara yudhyata. This tells Arjuna. Okay. We'll end. You going to get any rest before you go?
Yeah.
Okay. I should end.
Take this class and there are many hours of speaking. So we should also start flattering same way.
Flattering Krishna?
Yeah.
What's the difference between flattering and honest prayers?
Well, This is just in light of what you said. But once you start flattering, some honesty will also come. You can't do it always, you know, without honesty. It will fall flat.
That's what doing flat flattering.
Karat karat abhyaske jarmati hoye sujan. When you keep on practicing this, then even a fool will become enlightened.
Flattery? How do you flatter the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because he's worthy of anything you say.
No, but this is what everyone is doing, you know. Shiva is doing, Brahma is doing, everyone, the whole universe is doing. There was one person called Julius Caesar, whom people said...
Julius Caesar? How did he get into this? I thought you were going to say someone, you know...
He got into it in this way. That people told him, sir, you have one great quality. You don't feel flattered. And he used to feel flattered by these people saying this. He actually felt flattered because, yes, I don't feel flattered. No.
Yes, it's good flattery, yes.
I am here on the subject.
Huh? Of Julius Caesar?
Flattery.
That's what everyone is doing, no?
But I think Bhakti's meaning of flattery isn't exactly...
Yeah.
It means like praising, in that sense.
But flattery in this case is...
Because flattery has a connotation,
yes,
of falsity. But you don't mean that, I think.
No.
That's...
Glorifying. For a purpose.
Just, you know, lighter mood in the office.
Yeah.
But it's a fact, you know, that you are so and so, the shelter of everyone, this, you know.
Flattery, like, implies, like, you say more than the person actually is.
Yes.
But that's what you said, that's, you can't say that about Krishna.
He's already
everything. Everything wonderful.
We can only say less and less, not more and more.
Ah, that's good flattery. Whatever I say about you, Lord, it is less and less and less, and you're more and more and more. It's a good system. Okay, I think we should allow Madhuraman to have a few minutes of rest.
I'm flattered.
Just don't get a flat on the way to the airport.